This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Inside Story on BFM 89.9.
Good evening, this is Inside Story with Sharmila Ganesan and Lee Chui Lin. Tonight, the ongoing issue of how migrant workers are treated.
First, we look at the spate of recent headlines about forced labour in big companies, and then a study is being run to determine who is an expat and who isn't. So we look into why this is important and discuss how it feeds into double standards.
So tell us, what do you think are the biggest issues when it comes to how Malaysia treats migrant workers? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. This is Inside Story. It is 6:07, and today's story really is twofold. One looks at, as we said, recent headlines on forced labour and the outcome of some of these, but also looks at how much we've done to mitigate and handle these issues. And we're also going to then expand that conversation to look at how we view people who come into work in Malaysia. So to start off with, of course, there have been a number of companies that have recently been banned by the US after investigations into their operations, all of which to do with forced labour. And those companies are Top Glove, FGV Holdings, Supermax and Smart Glove. And I think it's worth looking at what happened in some of these circumstances and what the outcomes have been.
So I think it's important to note the companies and what they do, because of course, when the pandemic happened, it's still happening, but when the pandemic first began and there was a boom and a demand for certain items, I'm thinking here of gloves in particular, for instance, we saw these companies really being put under the spotlight because we're distributors on an international scale. We're manufacturers on an international scale. And therefore, people became concerned over who they were dealing with, I suppose. So if we look at Top Glove, for example, it happened in July 2020, and US Customs and Border Protection basically enforced a ban on imports from two subsidiaries of Top Glove over forced labor concerns. And by the end of December 2020, more than 5,000 Top Glove workers had tested positive. So that was another huge headline. And Reuters reported then that there was also the firing of a whistleblower who had raised concerns about COVID-19 mitigation efforts. Now, all of which to say that in September of this year, the ban was lifted after a review showed that Top Glove had addressed all indicators of forced labor. So that's just one company. And that's before we look at all the others that you mentioned.
So if we just run through a list very quickly of the others, FGV Holdings in September last year, after a year-long investigation, was blocked by the US for the import of palm oil after finding evidence of physical and sexual abuse, debt bondage and abusive conditions in the company. Supermax Corp, after an investigation, the US Customs and Border Protection said that they would detain imports of disposable gloves on forced labour allegations. 10 of the 11 forced labour indicators were identified during the course of their investigation. In November this year, following that US ban, the UK government has also launched an investigation into Supermax's operations. And finally, Smart Glove, just recently, the US Customs and Border Protection banned imports from the company less than a month, really, after that ban on Supermax, finding 7 indicators of forced labour.
So we said earlier that this is a complex issue, and I think it has a lot of different facets, right, from the macro to the micro. Because if we look at the macro, of course, there are worries about how this impacts our economy, how this feeds into one of the main drivers, one of our big businesses, to put it simply. But it also feeds into how we are perceived internationally, and that has its own complications. So that's on the macro level. On a smaller level, but no less important, that this raises issues about how we treat people who come to work here and the standards with which we hold ourselves when it comes to things like lodging, when it comes to things like working hours or even pay. Are we paying people on time? Are we paying people enough? And so while we may not like the sources of the investigations, and I think that that is actually something that's come up quite a bit, what they're finding is nevertheless important to look into and interrogate.
And I think that kind of brings us to the second angle that we're discussing today, right? Because for companies and even the government to be held to accountability, we need, I think, a better idea of how people are perceived. We need, I think, more... How do I put it? We need to stop looking at people who come into work in Malaysia as having more value in certain ways or less value in other ways. In other words, we bring them in because we have requirements for them, right? And so this study on the criteria of who can be given expatriate status is an interesting one because what they've said is that the objective is to determine what would qualify a person as an expatriate and to ensure that only those of high quality were given expatriate employment passes. But this opens up a conversation on that term, expatriate itself, and why it is that we tend to think that some people should be given a particular kind of treatment and others not.
Yes, so this is from the Home Minister, Datuk Sri Hamzah Zainuddin, who said that the exact criteria for this is going to be announced by the end of December. I'm actually quite surprised that we don't have an exact criteria because we've been using these terms for the longest time. You know, when we say expat, everybody, I think, can summon up a certain vision of who it is that we're talking about, what kind of position they hold, even perhaps the size of their paycheck and the expectation that comes with that. When we say migrant workers, conversely, the same is true. You can probably picture roughly who you think fits that mold. And so considering we have these perceptions, considering we use these words so freely, I would have thought that we had a clear governmental status or criteria when it comes to this. I'm also curious what it says about visas. When we provide people work visas in this country, is this sort of status now going to enter the picture?
And what does that translate into in terms of rights? What does that translate into in terms of treatment and the kind of recourse that employees can take if they're not being treated well by their companies? So there's a lot to unpack here and we're going to try to do as much as we can. So first, we are going to be looking at those allegations of forced labour. And for that, we'll be joined shortly by Adrian Pereira, Executive Director from the North-South Initiative. We would like to hear from you. What do you think are the biggest issues when it comes to how Malaysia treats migrant workers? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio.
Beyond Frivolous Matters, BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
It is 6:16. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila and Lynn. And today we're discussing the treatment of migrant workers here in Malaysia and really perceptions of them as well. We'd like to hear from you. What do you think are the biggest issues when it comes to how Malaysia treats migrant workers? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Joining us now is Adrian Pereira, Executive Director at North South Initiative. Adrian, welcome to the show.
Hi, hello. Happy to be here.
So there have been a lot of allegations of forced labour since last year pertaining to some big companies, workers coming forward to recount stories of mistreatment and so on. What can you tell us about this?
So I've been involved in the scene from the year 2000, from my student days. And I remember one incident where a migrant worker got beaten blue-black by his employer. And it was so shocking because when it was time to help him, the authorities came and caught him, not the person who was beating him blue-black. So I've seen so many cases like this over the last 20 years. It looks like the external factors or motivation is going to be the ones that will make us reform our labor policies and our foreign workers recruitment.
Broadly speaking, has there been enough engagement or action on the part of the government and in large companies in addressing these issues?
It's starting to build up. The government is reaching out to different NGOs. It initially started because of the COVID situation, but you have to couple that with forced labour allegations. So it's moving a bit, but this seems to be motivated by the stick. What we have to do is think how to use a carrot where we can find a win-win solution for everyone. But, you know, the economy, Malaysian economy is like this big 24-tire truck that is moving. And, you know, the industry thinks that, you know, if you put a spanner to stop forced labor component, the whole truck has to stop. It's not true. You can do that in stages. And I think it's not too late to start.
Speaking of that stick, really, do we have enough regulations in place to take companies to task when they commit these offences? What more needs to be done?
So the labour reforms are ongoing, but the standards for forced labour, which is basically built on the ILO's 11 indicators, our local laws haven't matched up to those. So it's a very strange situation where the international community is putting pressure on us and we on the ground are scrambling to barely understand what more to take action. And I can tell you, even till today, basic issues like wage theft is not resolved or we don't have the competency to resolve it in a timely manner. What more the complexities of forced labor, human trafficking, you know, it's not that we don't have the competency. The political will is just not in the right place.
You mentioned earlier that it may take external pressure from other countries, from external forces and parties, basically, to highlight these matters. Can you talk to us about the role that that has actually played and whether these bans have resulted in real change?
Yeah, so these bans are basically motivated by different governments trying to create a fair level playing field for industries. So, you know, they want to compete in a global supply chain that, you know, that is fair and, you know, you can have a good production without using forced labor. So different countries have different standards. Now, it's going to expand beyond to what the Americans are doing. I think Canada has exhibited some action. The Europeans are also talking about it. The UK is also talking about it, and Australia. So sooner or later, no matter where you want to export to, there will be some due diligence, forced labor corrections that need to be done. So that stick can hurt Malaysian industries. I think we just saw one happen a few days ago, in fact, where their stocks just plummeted. And it's time to take this a bit more seriously. International trade is not something new. These dialogues on forced labor have been going back many years, from Bali process to the ILO standards and even the United Nations system. So even ASEAN has started to talk about the topic. But why Malaysia is dragging its feet, I mean, we don't really know. It's very ambiguous, but my personal suspicion is there are some conflict of interest between government agencies which have financially invested in these companies to individuals who may also be benefiting from this whole supply chain. So hopefully together we can dig out the truth.
So if we look at it in a direct way, does the highlighting of these abuses impact Malaysia's economy or its global standing?
I think the truth has to be exposed regardless. Migrant workers need justice. Malaysian workers need justice. The fact that there's so many unemployed Malaysians and we are still thinking of recruiting foreigners shows that, you know, we haven't learned our lesson and we know that we can confidently keep abusing. The problem is our supply chain depends on Malaysian products. We monopolize certain sectors. So buyers and brands are confident no matter what happens in Malaysia, you know, they're still going to be dependent on these manufacturers who are abusing workers. So it's really going to come back to Malaysians. You know, whether we are smart consumers, whether we are smart employers with the, you know, the social responsibility to do what is right. At a global level, I mean, Malaysia, you know, palm oil, we are a global producer, gloves. So, you know, the buyers and brands don't have much options, you know. It's going to come back to us, you know.
So, with that said then, the ban on Top Glove issued by the US was eventually lifted after Top Glove had addressed all indicators of forced labor. What did you make of this?
So, Top Glove did exhibit certain remedial steps to fix the situation. And it's not a one-off thing, it's a process. So, this option is there for all companies. Usually there's a warning, and you know, even after after releasing the withhold release order, you know, companies are given step-by-step opportunities to resolve these problems. The question now is whether the Malaysian government is serious or not. That for me is the real question to ask, in and whether it has the technical know-how to advise companies, because we have labor inspectors, but whether the labor inspectors understand the full spectrum of what forced labor consists, and whether the private auditors also understand the puzzle of forced labor, because there's 11 indicators plus, that is yet to be seen.
What are we seeing from the Malaysian government in terms of political will or a willingness to actually address these issues?
So the Malaysian government is under pressure from Malaysians to provide better working conditions, higher wages, but they are still dependent on the low-wage, low-skill migrant worker. So that dilemma is something the Malaysian government has to resolve in the long term. And if they are ready, they should enforce non-discrimination across the board. And in that way, the industries will not be able to exploit through discriminatory practices. And over the long term, this will be able to normalize better standards for everyone, especially Malaysians. So Malaysians shouldn't ignore this issue. The exploitation and the low standards of labor is because the government and the industry knows there's a big pool of migrant workers that are steadily coming into Malaysia, and that's affecting all labor standards.
You mentioned earlier the importance of being savvy consumers as well. Do you think that there is a growing awareness of these issues among the public?
Sad to say, consumerism or consumer activism in Malaysia is not as vibrant as it should be. I'm not sure how many of us check whether our Nikes or Reeboks are produced in a safe environment. I'm not sure. You can check with your best friends or your BFFs. But we have the power as consumers to decide, especially if it's from the public sector and we are procuring products from industries which have suspected forced labor. And then in those cases, it's taxpayers' money. We are liable if we are buying products that are made with forced labor.
And how would you describe the sentiment among Malaysians when it comes to migrant workers?
So it's a very difficult question to answer. I think the ILO's report shows that there's certain negative outlooks from Malaysians. But if you study the analysis, it shows that it's really misinformed biases. So I think the contribution of migrants, Malaysians have come to acknowledge. But, you know, if you understand labor laws and if you understand rights standards, I think Malaysians should become a bit kinder to migrants. I see that slowly happening. Especially during the pandemic, we saw total strangers helping total strangers. And that cut across the board, Malaysians or migrants. So there is hope, but the supply chain is a bit more complex. It's driven by supply and demand. And, you know, PPEs, certain products are very much needed during the pandemic. So you need additional enforcers to be on the lookout. You need the migrant community's involvement also, you know, to help keep an eye on things. Yeah, so a lot of things still need to be done.
Adrian, thanks for speaking with us today.
Thank you. All the best. Bye-bye.
That was Adrian Pereira, Executive Director at the North-South Initiative, speaking to us about really migrant workers and their treatment here, both by companies as well as government, society. We'd like to hear from you. What do you think are the biggest issues when it comes to how Malaysia treats migrant workers? You can call 7732900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. After this, we'll look at a report that intends to essentially decide who gets to be an expat and who doesn't. So for that, we'll be joined by Dr. Niaz Asadullah, who's a professor of economics at University Malaya. So keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Beyond Frivolous Matters, BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
It is 6:37. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila and Lynn. And today we're focusing on migrant workers, migrants who come here for a livelihood, really. And we'd like to hear from you. What do you think are the biggest issues when it comes to how Malaysia treats migrant workers? You can call 7732900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We do have this message from Cheryl.
So Cheryl says, forced labour is happening in Malaysia because there is no political will, no enforcement, because migrant workers are seen as cash cows to all, whether it's duit kopi to legal and illegal contribution from migrant worker employers to the powers that be.
So Cheryl, I think that touches on actually a number of things, right? And a lot of that has to do with notions of power, because on the one hand, that term migrant worker in itself is associated with a certain type of employee and a certain type of work. And therefore, all of these things that you mentioned also leave them open to all sorts of exploitation and abuse along the way.
It's a normalization, isn't it, of treatment, I think, is what it comes down to. Because when we say these things, sadly, I think very few among us are shocked. We don't have that feeling of, how can this be happening? Instead, it's almost taken as a given that, yes, when we ask people, or not ask people, but when we hire people from other countries here in Malaysia, especially if they are not expats, which we'll get into shortly, but instead are migrant workers, it's normal for them not to have access to their passports. It's normal for them to not get paid on time. It's normal for them to, you know, it keeps going on and on. It piles up. And that idea of the normalization, I think, is something that we really need to attack and something that we need to really properly interrogate and move away from.
Do keep those thoughts coming. What do you think are the biggest issues here when it comes to how Malaysia treats migrant workers? You can call 7732900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. And as you said, Lynn, that term expat is one that comes up quite often in this conversation in contrast to that term migrant worker. And we're going to be looking at that with a little bit more detail now. And that's on the wake of a study that the government is doing to really refine who gets to be called an expat and all of the things that come with it. And for that, we are now joined by Dr. Niaz Asadullah, Southeast Asia Lead at the Global Labour Organization. Dr. Niaz, thank you for being with us today. Could you first talk us through what an expatriate status is and what it means to have it?
So usually expats are foreign professionals in Malaysia who hold an employment pass visa. They have to have certain level of monthly income to secure the expat status. This also includes, foreign nationals holding long-term resident permits from Talent Corp. And of course, I should also add that there are those holding MM2H visa, which the government suspended last year.
And what is the distinction then between an expat and a migrant worker?
So again, you know, it's down to the monthly salary one earns as a foreign citizen in Malaysian labor market. So if you, again, think about expats, they typically hold three type of employment visas. All of them are subject to monthly salary. So anyone with a minimum of 3,000 Malaysian ringgit per month is categorized as an expat. So anyone who is below this would then fall under migrant worker category.
So besides these two categories, are there other categories under which non-Malaysians might come into work here?
So as I've mentioned that, you know, so there is MM2H scheme. But again, within the expat category, one can, hold a job with a salary of 3,000 to 5,000 ringgit or 5,000 to 10,000 ringgit and then 10,000 above. So those are the three income bands. And they have to come in one of these bands. Now, the reason, you know, of course, you know, this kind of is a mechanism for the government to distinguish between skilled and unskilled, you know, foreign citizen in the labor market, in the sense that, well, you know, anyone with a job offering less than 3,000 would be categorized as an unskilled worker, and hence, you know, they are given a temporary visit pass instead of an employment pass.
So, Dr. Nias, what kind of access does an expat status have and a migrant worker status have, especially if we're talking about economic mobility or social access?
So again, it depends on the type of visa and expat holds. For example, all of, you know, expats in Malaysia typically would have an employment visa, which means that your immigration is tied to your employment. So the day your employment ends, you are required by law to leave the country. Having said that, if an expat holds a talent pass from Talent Corp, that then gives him or her the opportunity to stay in the country, look for another job. But this is only a minority who enjoys this privilege. So for the majority, therefore, being an expat professional in Malaysia is not quite a very secure experience, in the sense that, you know, the law requires them to leave the country as soon as the employment expires, leaving very little time to look for a job and to relocate to a different location once the employment contract expires.
Now, this conversation, of course, is happening because the government has announced that it's going to do a study into defining expats. Now, how would that be useful?
Well, we don't know an awful lot about the scope and the design of the study. Of course, the timing is interesting, but I can think of two possibilities here. Listening to our Honourable Home Minister, you know, YB Zainuddin, the study is meant to improve targeting of foreign nationals in Malaysian labour market. The purpose is to identify genuine expats so that they can be provided preferential facilities and the recognition they deserve as skilled professionals. If true, this sounds like a good initiative. And of course, this would then, in theory, attract more foreign talents to Malaysia. But to me, the actual objective seems to be something else. It is really about tightening migration control. And as a matter of fact, creating greater protection for local workers seeking low-wage jobs. And of course, you know, it is not surprising, you know, I would be surprised if the study is ultimately used as an excuse to raise the income floor that defines an expat currently from 3,000 ringgit to 5,000 ringgit a month. This will effectively mean that a buffer zone will be created in the labor market, as there will be effectively no foreign nationals for jobs with a monthly salary between 3,000 to 5,000 ringgit.
You mentioned that the timing was interesting. Could you expand on that?
So the timing is interesting in the sense that, we should not forget that, we have an election around the corner. And in times such as these, popular demands are sort of given priority in the policy, circle. And again, the other part of it is that we are in times of crisis, pandemic. There is enormous political pressure for the government to provide greater social protection for citizens, to create jobs for low-income categories. So I suppose all of those forces are combining to lead to this kind of measures and, commissioning such studies.
We're discussing a study that the government has announced to define what an expatriate is. And we're speaking with Dr. Nias Asadullah, Southeast Asia Lead at the Global Labour Organization. Do keep sending your thoughts our way. What do you think are the biggest issues when it comes to how Malaysia treats migrant workers? You can call 7732900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll continue the conversation after this. So keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Beyond Frivolous Matters, BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
It is 6:48. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila and Lynn, and we're continuing our conversation on expatriates and a study by the government that seeks to define who gets to be called an expatriate. And for that, we are speaking with Dr. Niaz Asadullah, Southeast Asia Lead at the Global Labour Organization and Professor of Economics at University Malaya. Dr. Niaz, so just to pick up on our conversation, it's quite clear that to be deemed an expatriate or a migrant worker also affects the way people might perceive you and the role that you play in Malaysia. How do these perceptions impact how they're treated and the rights that they're given?
Indeed, this is a very important issue that you raised. Perception does affect behavior. And as we encounter more debates such as this, and we see there is this ongoing confusion among policymakers or reconsideration to sort of relabel foreign nationals into certain category, it kind of adversely affects public perception on the rights of a certain category of workers in the labor market and the responsibility of employers towards a certain category of workers. And this in turn, therefore, affects the way they are treated in the labor market. This is also therefore one reason why Malaysia is again and again in the news for the wrong reason. In different sectors now, we have seen accusations from, foreign governments of user forced labor. But, this is not just a problem that is limited to factory floor. It is running much deeper into the labor market. The reality is that regardless of whether it's a factory worker or a university professor or a doctor or an engineer or a banker, foreign nationals suffer multiple forms of vulnerabilities. This also helps justify the way they are treated and, as a matter of fact, why the country's labor law does not guarantee equal opportunities for, certain individuals in the labor market solely based on citizenship. And this, therefore, in turn, creates huge bottlenecks when it comes to opportunities for professional growth and development. This is one reason why we also hear many bright Malaysians leaving the country particularly those who are born overseas and then, relocate to Malaysia. And also why, even among high-skilled professionals, their tenure is not long in Malaysia. Most leave after, few years. And therefore, it is intimately related to not just our effort to attract, but also to retain talents in the economy.
So with that understanding then, how might the study and the conversations that it's prompted impact this larger issue of the way we think about migrant workers and expats?
So, one way to look at it is that it's just one random study, but it is also kind of capturing this, ongoing discomfort in the, policy circle. In a way, for me, this sort of study is signaling a return of the protectionist mindset in policymaking. It kind of reflects the challenge that the government is facing to sort of provide greater protection in the labor market for B40 citizens. At the same time, of course, it is a reflection of a longer term concern in policy circle. If I'm to connect with a development last year when the Human Resources Minister YB Saravanan announced that Malaysian employers who wish to hire foreign workers and professionals to a rehiring program and apply for expatriate recruitment must first advertise the vacancies on the national employment portal. So therefore, you can see that, there is a longer term, context to what is happening. But nonetheless, all these developments collectively are, adding to the sense of vulnerability that foreign citizens face in Malaysia. And also it is creating, uncertainty for employers. Remember that as we speak, the whole world is going through a labor, shortage. We have seen the crisis in Australia, how the government there is appealing to ASEAN governments to let their citizens go and, work in Australian agricultural sector. But again, this sort of crisis is also being seen in high-income countries. So the fact of the matter is that Malaysia is in a globalized labor market and we are competing for talents. So therefore, I think, you know, the challenge is really to make sure that we make the labor market as attractive and as flexible as possible, not, you know, with fewer restrictions and with opportunities that is equal for everyone.
And what we call people or what we term people does matter, right? So do we need to rethink these terms, migrant worker, expatriate? Are there perhaps other categories or terms that might work better?
Well, yes, this is, you know, a challenge, I suppose, for all countries with, you know, smaller population size, domestic labor forces limited in size, and therefore there is, you know, reliance on, you know, foreign citizens to contribute to the local economy. And this is intimately related to the issue of labor standard. Many of these countries are emerging economies where the laws and institutions have not fully developed. And, the, you know, there is also limited room for open debate on, you know, equal opportunities and the idea of citizenship. And in case of Malaysia, the long legacy of NEP has also added to this challenge. We have very strong, you know, tradition of identity politics, and we have so many ways of categorizing even Malaysians. And therefore, I'm not surprised that when it comes to foreign citizens, the same mindset is shaping policy. But again, as you know, as we speak, you know, this is a very globalized, interconnected labor market. Even within ASEAN, Malaysia has to compete with Singapore for talents, regardless of whether it is a foreign talent or whether it is holding on to local talents. So therefore, yes, perception does matter, and we have to revisit the way we label certain, you know, segment in the labor market. And I suppose the government has to reflect on the policy communication challenge, you know, choosing words carefully so that everyone feels included and not left behind in the labor market.
You know, we often hear calls to limit the amount of migrant workers entering our country. Are we seeing the same sorts of sentiment being applied to people with expatriate status?
Well, you know, if you think about it, the recent study, in a way, is sending mixed signal. One way to look at it is that, well, the government is trying to better target expats so that they can be taken care of. Another way to look at it is that the government is actually reducing the income bracket, you know, within which a foreign professional can come and work as an expat. And for many multinational corporations working in Malaysia, this will effectively mean that they face greater restriction to attract foreign talents at a lower wage. Because following this study, if the floor for an expat is raised from 3,000 ringgit to 5,000 ringgit, it means that foreign companies, particularly if you think of attempt to digitize the economy, there is huge demand for data scientists. And if you are recruiting someone from India, then effectively it means that you can and you must hire foreign nationals, you know, offering a higher entry-level salary. So how this would impact Malaysia's attempt to attract FDI, Malaysia's attempt to sort of, you know, globalize the, you know, manufacturing sector, that remains to be seen. And I think this is an area where the government must consult employers, regardless of whether they're local or not, because these policies can and will have long-term impact on the country's attempt to skill up and transit to high-value-added activities, because that's where the demand for talents arise, regardless of whether there is local and foreign. And let me also add that Malaysia's wage level is much lower compared to other countries of similar income level. So already, therefore, we are, you know, in a low wage setting. And in such a context, if we are kind of adding further restrictions regarding, you know, attracting foreign talents against certain income categories, that can further lower Malaysia's comparative advantage in the global labor market.
Dr. Nias, we just have about 30 seconds left, but how can policies be improved to ensure equal treatment of everyone who comes to Malaysia for work?
I think it's time that we stop playing identity politics in the labor market. Malaysia needs talents to rebuild the economy and to recover from the damage caused by the pandemic. So anyone who contributes to nation building must be treated equally, regardless of citizenship, race, or ethnicity. So until unless we embrace the principle of equal opportunity, I think we are missing the point by reducing the debate to, you know, just foreign citizens and foreign workers.
Dr. Nias, thanks for speaking with us today.
Thank you.
That was Dr. Nias Asadullah, Southeast Asia lead at the Global Labour Organization and Professor of Economics at University Malaya, weighing in on a study that the government has undertaken to refine how someone gets defined as an expatriate. But we are speaking about migrant workers and people who come into work in general. Do share your thoughts with us. What do you think are the biggest issues when it comes to how Malaysia treats migrant workers? You can call 7732900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.